This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. We're broadcasting today from the Knight Studio at the Newseum, Washington, D.C.'s newest museum devoted to journalism and the news business. John Edwards' affair, revelations of turmoil, dysfunction, and backbiting in the Clinton campaign. Senators McCain and Obama release new attack ads and the politics of the other Georgia. It's Wednesday and time for our weekly visit with the political junkie.
There you go again.
You do that, when I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Although we weren't able to shatter that highest, hardest glass ceiling this time, thanks to you, it's got about 18 million cracks in it.
But I'm the decider.
NPR political editor Kent Rudin joins us every Wednesday to talk about the presidential campaign and other political news. This week, a new poll shows the presidential race just about even. Both Clintons will speak in Denver, but what about a roll call vote for Hillary? In a few minutes, independent presidential candidate Ralph Nader joins us. And later, he sat through all 47 primary debates and lived to tell the tale, journalist Jim Fallows, on what to expect when McCain and Obama square off in the fall. But first, it's the political junkie, Ken Rudin, back from vacation. Lots of news while you were gone. And here's with us at the Newseum, as usual, and as usual, has a trivia question for us.
Hi, Neil. Well, let's see. I think my questions get more convoluted than each time, but okay.
It was not all that time on vacation to clear your mind.
That's right. Senator Evan Bayh of Indiana is listed as on the short list of Barack Obama possible running mates. Of course, his father, Birch Bayh, was a three-term senator from Indiana, later lost to Dan Quayle. We know that also that Al Gore was a senator when he was picked for vice president in 1992, and his father, Albert Gore Sr., was a senator. Who was, okay, here comes the question,
okay.
20 minutes later. Who was the last vice presidential candidate not a senator whose father was a senator?
The last vice presidential candidate who was not a senator.
I'm struggling here.
Whose father served in the United States Senate.
But VP candidate was not a senator.
If you think you can figure that question out and know the answer,
that's right.
Give us a call, 800-989-8255. You can also zap us an email, talk@npr.org. And anybody here at the Newseum thinks they know the answer, and come up to the microphone there.
I do.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Ken, a couple of big news stories this week. Last week, Senator Edwards admitted that he had an affair and lied about it. And also, of course, the fighting in the caucuses between Russia and Georgia, illustrating some differences between the two major party presidential candidates.
Well, let's take the second part first. Obviously, the last time we had fighting in the caucuses, we were in Iowa. Obviously, this is more serious, and obviously, it's a foreign policy dilemma for both candidates because it also shows the limits of U.S. power, and we saw that for all the rhetoric about Russian aggression or whatever, you know, or what Georgia may have done. Obviously, we've been able to do nothing. The U.S. has been able to do nothing. It's a slight advantage for John McCain only because I suspect because Barack Obama's on vacation in Hawaii, so you see John McCain on the news almost every day with forceful, even more forceful statements all the time. I have the gravitas. I have the foreign policy experience. I know
President Shakespeare. Philly,
right. So in a sense, this does help John McCain, but at the same time, the Obama people are also fighting back, saying that his rhetoric, McCain's rhetoric, is far too militant. Obviously, it wouldn't have accomplished anything. And in some ways, Obama seems more in tune with the Bush administration's response to it. So it's kind of hard to do anything because obviously you can make all the statements you want, but ultimately it will not affect what Russia decides to do.
And going on to that other news story, Senator Edwards conceding after months of denying it, going back to last October, well before the Iowa caucuses, that he did indeed have an affair.
Well, of course, you know, the story was broken by the National Enquirer back in the fall, and many of us, including did we know about the rumors? Yes, we knew about the rumors. Did we comment on them? No, and I think it was the right decision. I think it's nobody's business if John Edwards is having an affair.
Is it anybody's business if a candidate for president is lying about an affair?
Well, but look, if you're having an affair, you're lying about it. And, of course, if the National Enquirer asks you a question, of course you say that it didn't happen. But here's where it gets dicey. If you are, John Edwards was running for president. He could have been the Democratic nominee, or as not too long ago, he said that he was available to be Barack Obama's running mate. Had he been on the Democratic ticket and this revelation came out in the end of October, I suspect it would have completely sunk the Democratic chances. So he put not only his family in jeopardy, but he put his party in jeopardy. Now, also, when you watched him on Nightline last week, there were so many things that were so weird. Is it okay to have an affair only if your wife's cancer is in remission? I mean, there were so many strange things there. the woman he allegedly had the affair with has been getting millions of dollars from John Edwards' former national campaign finance chair. And John Edwards says he knew nothing about these arrangements. Some of these questions, some of these answers that John Edwards gave on Nightline just seem so unbelievable. So again, is it any of our business? No. But since he's come forward on a national program and allegedly answered he was 99% honest, I suspect he was far less than 99% honest.
Now let's see if we can get somebody with an answer to our trivia question. And let's go now to line two, and that'll be John. And John's calling us from Buffalo, New York.
Hi.
Hey, John.
Yes.
And what's the answer to the trivia question?
George Bush's father, Prescott Bush, was a senator from Connecticut in the 1950s.
So your answer is George H.W. Bush.
Yes.
And that is the correct answer.
Hey, 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 the first time out. So, John, you get the no prize this week. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks very much for the call. Moving on to other news, there is a story in The Atlantic describing the internal emails and memos inside the Clinton campaign, which don't paint a pretty picture.
No, not at all. We all, you know, the Hillary campaign, the word now is that it was media sexism that did in Hillary Clinton. But if you read these emails from Mark Penn, between Mark Penn, Howard Wolfson, all the people, Patty Solis Doyle, who was a former campaign chairman, it showed a very dysfunctional campaign with people just not agreeing on strategy. And the fact is that Hillary Clinton, for all her experience that she came into the 2008 election, was unable to bridge these battles among her campaign staff.
Yet, despite all that turmoil, she won almost 18 million votes, so won more primaries than anybody who lost the campaign.
Right, but when she lost, the time she lost the campaign, the nomination is one. She lost in Iowa, which she could have won. As a matter of fact, Howard Wolfson, her former campaign spokesman, said this week that had the media done its job and reported the John Edwards affair, and this is very funny for a Clinton staffer to say this, but if the media had done its job and reported about John Edwards, then he would have failed in Iowa, and she would have picked up the votes. That's debatable anyway, but it's just interesting that that's the Clinton campaign thing. But also the fact that they didn't know what to do about the caucuses when Barack Obama had won 12 in a row.
Mostly in small states.
Small states, but again, it gave him a momentum. It gave him more and more superdelegates moving to his side. And they spent over $100 million by the time New Hampshire was done, and they really ran out of money. So there was a lot of infighting. There was a lot of dysfunctional. There was pettiness. There was rivalries, bitterness, and it really helped defeat, you know, help bring down somebody who was a clear frontrunner going into the election.
And amazingly, you weren't involved in it.
No, I had nothing to do with this, no.
Let's see if we can go to the campaigns that are running still. Those, of course, John McCain's and Barack Obama's. New ads this week from both John McCain continuing to pursue the image of Barack Obama as a celebrity.
We know he doesn't have much experience and isn't ready to lead, but that doesn't mean he isn't dreamy.
The aura around him is just really nice.
What I love most about him is that he has very soft eyes.
Hot chicks dig Obama.
We're not worthy. We're not.
Actually, they had to take that last part off because it turns out they didn't own the copyright to that particular Saturday Night Live bit.
Well, you know, it shows that obviously John McCain says he's having fun with it, and if you ask John McCain if he's going negative, as Renee
did this morning,
Montaigne
yes.
on a Morning Edition said, he said, no, I'm just contrasting the differences. But it's not the John McCain we're used to seeing, which is more of, he promised a more positive, uplifting campaign, and obviously having these attacks on Obama day in and day out, it's actually, I think, resulting in a new configuration of the polls, which show that the race has tightened. More and more people are having more and more doubts about Barack Obama, and more Republicans are coming to the fold for John McCain. Perhaps that's the reason why he's trying to knock down Barack Obama. But whatever it is, it seems to be working, and McCain seems to be gaining.
And whatever it is, Barack Obama seems to be snapping back.
For decades, he's been Washington's biggest celebrity.
John McCain.
And as Washington embraced him, John McCain hugged right back. The lobbyists running his low road campaign. The money, billions in tax breaks for oil and drug companies, but almost nothing for families like yours.
And not only correctly saying that John McCain is a pretty large celebrity himself, going on to that lobbyist issue where, a couple of interesting stories about that this week, too.
Right, exactly. I mean, one of his top lobbyists was a lobbyist for the Georgia Republic, not Atlanta, but the country.
Tbilisi.
There, right? And also DHL, the carrier, Rick Davis. John McCain's campaign manager was a lobbyist for DHL, which purchased some a rival company,
Airborne Express,
right in
Ohio.
Ohio, thank you very much, Wilmington, Ohio, and it looks like because of this merger, some up to 10,000 people may lose their jobs in a very important swing state of Ohio. So the lobbyist connection may come back to bite John McCain as well.
The Democratic convention starts in less than 2 weeks. Finally, gets underway. Both Clintons have been giving speaking roles, and interesting. A speaking role for a senatorial candidate.
That's right. Mark Warner, the odds-on favorite to replace John Warner, the Republican, no relation, in Virginia. He will be the keynote speaker on Tuesday, August 26th. Of course, 4 years ago, there was another Senate candidate named by the name of Barack Obama who gave the keynote speech at the Democratic convention. Mark Warner seen as a rising star. But you know what's interesting? By having Mark Warner as the keynote speaker, it makes more less and less sense that Tim Kaine, the governor of Virginia, will be the VP candidate.
As we look ahead, though, both former President Clinton and the would-be President Clinton are going to get a chance to speak, but still a furor over whether Hillary Clinton's backers, they still want a roll call vote that would include Hillary Clinton.
Well, of course, you know, Hillary Clinton, a lot of people say that she deserved it. She got more votes than any defeated a candidate for the nomination in history. And of course, you know, she could come out and say, after all is said and done, we are a united party. But I think one of the reasons some of the polls show the race getting closer and closer is that you still have only about three quarters of Hillary Clinton supporters backing Barack Obama. There's still a sizable contingent that refused to come over and endorse Obama. And I think so there's still bad blood. But this is not what Obama wants. Again, with, as you say, less than 2 weeks to go before the convention starts. There's still ill will, the Howard Wolfson statement, and also the mechanics of Bill and Hillary Clinton trying to basically attract all the coverage going into Denver.
Well, stay with us, Ken Rudin. When we come back, independent presidential candidate Ralph Nader joins us here at the Newseum to take your calls. If you'd like to talk to him, 800-989-8255. You can also send us email. The address is talk@npr.org. There's a conversation underway at our blog as well. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. I'm Neil Conan. This is the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. It's Wednesday, so we're broadcasting from the Knight Studio inside the Newseum in Washington, D.C. I'm Neil Conan. Back in February, Ralph Nader announced he was running for president as an independent candidate, the longtime consumer advocate's third consecutive run for the White House. If you'd like to talk with him about his campaign, why he's running, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email again is talk@npr.org. And, of course, political junkie Ken Rudin was with us. He's NPR's political editor, and you can read his political junkie column at npr.org. And, Ralph Nader, nice to have you with us on the program again. Why are you running for president? Remind us.
Whole number of changes and redirections that are supported by a majority of the American people. We're the only ones who are standing for full Medicare for all, for a living wage, for cutting the bloated, wasteful military budgets full of so much contracting fraud that's offending taxpayers. We want to cut down taxpayer coerced subsidies to corporations, you know, the handouts, giveaways, bailouts of crooked Wall Street firms. Well, open up the presidential debates. Why are we rationing debates? We don't ration weather reports, do we?
No.
Or entertainment or sports. And we want to shift the tax burden more to things that society likes the least or dislikes the most, like security, derivative speculation, pollution, gambling, addictive industries, before you first tax human labor. And we want to crack down on corporate crime, fraud, and abuse. And, you know, public radio has reported that repeatedly. Stealing people's pensions, ripping off their savings, their mutual funds. All this has been reported, and the major party candidates, McCain and Obama, are taking these issues off the table. They don't have a corporate crime crackdown, law and order against these crooks. They don't have a decent tax reform. They don't want to open up the presidential debates. They don't want full Medicare for all, which even a majority of doctors want in a recent poll, and a majority of the American people, giving you free choice of doctor and hospital, cutting out a lot of wasteful bureaucratic expenses. And they really don't have a plan to get out of Iraq, and they want to expand the Afghanistan war. So we really have a very broad agenda for people to sink their teeth in and say, what's left for us to decide as people? Is there anything left for us to decide? Is these corporations have hijacked our government and control about every department and agency? That's what we're saying to the American people. If you don't take it over, if you don't win your government back, if you don't vote for people you believe in who have a record of accomplishment and a good platform, which you can see on votenator.org, what's left for you to decide? I mean, these two parties don't represent you in area after area. Their drum is beaten by the big corporations.
Can we have some time for callers to ask some questions? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and let's see if we can get a caller on the line. Let's go to, this is line six. This is Peter. Peter with us from Pendleton, is that right, in Oregon? Pendleton, it must be.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi.
Go.
Hi,
you're on the air.
Mr. Nader?
Yes, sir.
Hi. In 2004, I voted for John Kerry, and I actually have regretted it ever since, and I really wish that I had written your name in. Of course, I don't believe you were on the ballot in Oregon, but
the Democrats pushed us off.
I'm sorry?
The Democrats pushed us off state ballots with frivolous litigation, partisan judges. You're right. We weren't on a ballot.
Yeah.
Even though we got a lot of signatures, more than necessary.
It was pretty dirty. But yeah. This year, it seems just so easy to just get behind Barack Obama. But at the same time, there are people like me who are pretty liberal and, see you as a more progressive candidate. You know, what is one way that Barack Obama could become more progressive?
Well, he could be the Barack Obama who knows what the score is, rather than having antenna out for political advantage. He would reflect what he believes, what he said privately believes. We should have full Medicare for all. He prefers the single payer system. He certainly knows about the exploitation, commercial and otherwise, of the lower 100 million Americans on the income scale. But he doesn't associate himself with any comprehensive reform plan there. He's taking actually more corporate interest money than John McCain as of June 30 of this year. And he wants to have a bigger military budget. His plan for getting out of Iraq, according to his military advisor, would leave 50,000 soldiers, American soldiers there, with all these bases. That's not really getting out of Iraq. I think he's making a strategic mistake that Mondale and Dukakis and Kerry and others have made by moving toward the Republican position on area after area, are not drawing a bright line between the two, as these issues I mentioned earlier. He's going to lose votes. He's not going to gain votes.
And let me ask you, Senator Obama, of course, the Democratic nominee this time around, you're on the ballots in 35 states. Is the Democratic Party this year continuing to work to keep you off the ballots elsewhere?
No, not so far. We're going to be on about 45 state ballots. We sued the Democratic Party last November for their abuse of legal process and violating our civil rights in 2004, places like Pennsylvania. And I think in answer to your question, what's keeping them from doing what they did in 2004 is the State Attorney General of Pennsylvania has brought indictments against 12 Democrats, 2 state legislators, and 10 legislative aides for using government money, government space, government resources to get us off the ballot in 2004 in Pennsylvania. Right. And they also gave them $188,000 taxpayer bonus. I mean, this is criminal stuff. So I don't think they're going to do it again this year.
Peter, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
Let's go to line two, and line two is Craig, and Craig's with us from Chicago.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I worry about Mr. Nader, all of your accomplishments from, you know, taking on the auto industry and all the activism you've done getting lost in the abuse you take for running for president. And so I think all those accomplishments should be acknowledged. But I wonder and I've spoken to some mutual friends of ours who've also thought, you know, running wasn't a good idea for you. And all the abuse you take and all the people who say, don't run, what is it that motivates you against, you know, such huge odds to keep doing what you do? Where do you find your motivation?
Well, I came to Washington over 40 years ago to improve my country, and we did a lot of good things. Safer motor vehicles, got the Clean Air, Water Pollution Control Bill, the Occupational Safety, EPA. But the corporations counterattacked. They expanded their lobbying corps here in the city and had a lot more campaign money pumping into both parties. And the doors started closing on us. Now, I'm not going to take that line down. What keeps me going is because both parties are not doing the things they should do to save hundreds of thousands of lives and millions of injuries in this country. They are not dealing with strong enforcement to deal with the 58,000 workers who OSHA says die from work-related diseases and trauma every year, or 65,000 people who EPA say die from air pollution every year, or 100,000 people who die from medical negligence in hospitals every year. These are all official estimates. Or the 18,000 people who die because they can't afford health insurance. Imagine that. There's no one who dies in Canada or Belgium or Germany or England or Sweden because they can't afford health insurance. That's where I get my drive from. And I think that a lot of liberals and progressives who are so freaked out with the Republicans, quite naturally, are not making demands on Obama to make him come out in these progressive positions as if human beings count first, which would get him more votes. And as a result, there's a lot of political bigotry against third party and independent candidates in this country, far more than there was in the 19th century. I mean, these are the parties that put forth the great social justice efforts, the Anti-Slavery Liberty Party, 1840, the Women's Right to Vote Party, the Worker Farmer Parties. We wouldn't have the country we had today if it wasn't for these little parties. They never won a national election, but it was easier to get on the ballot than it is today.
Craig, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And let's see, we get Terry on the line. Terry with us from Egg Harbor Township in New Jersey.
Hi, yes. I heard a small portion of an interview with Mr. Nader, and he discussed his position about changing the illegality of drug addiction to being viewed as a medical condition. And I'd like him to expand on how he would do that. And I wondered if he thought that someone who is arrested for a drug conviction, should that person take their fight all the way to the Supreme Court to have the laws that we have that are so unfair and biased overturned?
Well, my point is simply this, and we're not talking about the drug dealers and the kingpins. We're talking about people who are caught with possession of drugs like marijuana and who are filling the corporate jails at $30,000 to $50,000 per prisoner that the taxpayer is paying for. My point is this. We don't send nicotine addicts to jail. We don't arrest and send alcoholics to jail. And between those drugs, so to speak, there are 500,000 American lives lost. Why are we sending drug-addicted people to jail? That's a health problem. It should not be a criminal issue. People should be rehabilitated. They should be helped the way we try to help people who are alcoholics. And we do that, we'll be a much more rational policy. We won't have so many shoot-em-ups in the streets. We won't be spending as much as $60 billion on this drug war. And we'll be much more humane. And we won't drive the drug situation underground where it really thrives and is related to a lot of violence.
You said like marijuana. Would that include cocaine, heroin?
Yeah, for possession. I mean, nicotine is a far greater killer. I mean, tobacco is a far greater killer. We should decriminalize and regulate marijuana, for example. There are 800,000 arrests for marijuana possession in this country every year. What I said is we're over-prosecuting these possessors of drugs and we're under-prosecuting corporate crime. And we should empty the cells with these small possessors of marijuana and have some space for these corporate criminals that are not just stealing. They are violating health and safety laws. There's a lot of death, injury, and disease that's preventable if we knew how to crack down on corporate crime. If Obama and McCain would make an issue of this, they don't want to debate. I must say that McCain has offered to debate Obama, I think, 10 town meetings, isn't it?
Yes.
And he's turned it down. That's a mistake for Obama. McCain's going to hammer again and again that Obama is only going to debate him two or three times in the fall, and he should debate him every week in these town meetings. And the more Obama says no, I think the more he's going to lose support.
We're talking with independent president. Oh, by the, thank you very much for the call, Terry. Appreciate it. We're talking with independent presidential candidate Ralph Nader here at the Newseum. I'm Neil Conan, along with NPR political junkie Ken Rudin. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get a question from here in the Newseum.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Patty from San Francisco, California. And as a retired public school principal, I'd like to know your views on No Child Left Behind, and I'd also like to know what your education platform is.
Well, the way No Child Left Behind has been implemented is not good. First of all, there are too many tests. It ruptures the relation between teachers and students. They got to have a test Tuesday, a test Thursday. They're the wrong kind of tests, in my opinion, A, B, C, D, none of the above. That's not the assessment tests that I think are better evaluators. They make teachers teach to the test. There's this frantic test mania that creates unnecessary anxiety among children. So I'm against it. Teachers are against it, too. A lot of people think it was underfunded. I think the key thing in environmental agenda for a presidential candidate is, one, decent facilities. I mean, a lot of these inner-city schools are crumbling. We have gleaming stadiums funded by you, the taxpayer. And in the same city, the schools and clinics and libraries are crumbling. The second is decent pay for competent teachers. They should be assessed, too. And the third is citizen skills, civic skills. We should teach students connecting the classroom with their town, with their community, so they can learn about the history, geography, economics, government of their town, and in the process, learn citizen skills, how to use the Freedom of Information Act in your state, how to build coalitions, how to get information from City Hall, how to do comparative price analyses of staples in supermarkets. That's what makes students learn indirectly reading, writing, and arithmetic. And I hope that a lot of teachers will replace this, push to replace No Child Left Behind with this kind of very practical, down-to-earth, and very exciting educational process.
Thanks for the question. Appreciate it. Let's go to the phones and line six. And Mike is with us from Boca Raton in Florida.
Good morning or good afternoon. Mr. Candidate, considering what's happened since the year 2000, don't you think that your candidacy creates too much of a risk of unintended consequences based on your past performance?
Well, the social scientists who studied that say that Gore won the election. He won the popular vote. The Electoral College stood in his way, and the press investigations and others in Florida indicate, and Gore believes this, that he won Florida, but it was taken from him before, during, and after Election Day in all kinds of tricky ways that have been subject of documentaries and investigations, to the five Republicans who in the Supreme Court who selected George W. Bush. So I keep saying to the Democrats, look in the mirror, go after the thieves, because they might do it again, and there was a lot of shenanigans in Ohio, the swing state that left Kerry behind.
Which of the two candidates would you prefer to be the next president, the other two candidates?
No, the ones that are closer to the agenda of Nader Gonzalez, and we don't have time to go through a checklist, but if you want to look at votenader.org, we have a sheet which says these are the issues on the table for Nader Gonzalez, like full health insurance, and they're off the table for McCain and Obama. It's quite remarkable how similar they are on about 15 major redirections for our country, and the reason is they've been dialing too much for corporate dollars, and they're too close to these commercial interests.
Well, you know, I'm all for anybody being able to run, but candidly, we can't stand another 8 years of George Bush and McCain in that crowd.
Nor can we. In fact, if Al Gore picked up my withering criticism in detail of Bush's record in Texas when he was governor, he'd have won even over these obstacles that the Republicans illegally put in his way.
Mike, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. And Ralph Nader, thank you for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank Public Radio. And I hope Charlie Rose and Terry Gross and Diane Rehm listen to this, too.
I'm not sure if they're a part of our audience, but we'll commend them, too.
Thanks, Neil.
Ralph Nader, of course, the independent presidential candidate. Coming up, James Fallows subjected himself to every one of the primary debates based on what he's heard. He'll tell us what he thinks we can expect this fall when there are three debates between the major party candidates. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.